How did the universe come to be? What started it all? Was there anything before the universe? In this episode, we explore these age-old questions, comparing both the scientific and metaphysical cosmology. We are all familiar with the dramatic words of Genesis describing the creation of heaven and earth. But long before the Bible was ever written, creation stories have been a part of every spiritual and shamanic tradition throughout the world. We yearn to understand this vast universe and our place in it. Most creation stories fall under one of two types. Either the universe was created from nothing, or it is eternal with no beginning or end. But as we'll see through the union of modern astrophysics and ancient mystery school teachings of cosmology, we can reconcile these two contrasting views and gain new insights into the nature of the multiverse. While many religions placed Earth at the center of creation, this was not always the dominant view. For example, ancient Hermetic and alchemical teachings said that the sun was the center, while Mayan shamans had a very precise and complex astronomical calendar that was based on galactic cycles around the Milky Way. Scientific revolutions in cosmology began during the Renaissance. Nicholas Copernicus used mathematics to show the sun should be the center. Johannes Kepler improved upon this by proposing a sacred geometry model of the solar system, while Galileo conducted many observations supporting these ideas. But it wasn't until Isaac Newton formulated his laws of motion and gravitation that the scientific revolution was finally cemented in. While we have all heard of these great achievements, what we are not usually told is that all of these scientists were initiates. They studied the ancient Hermetic, alchemical, and Pythagorean mystery school teachings. And it is from the metaphysical arts and sciences that these greats gained their true insights. How has cosmology changed since the Renaissance era? Progress didn't really start happening until the 20th century, when scientific cosmology had a rebirth. It kicked off with Einstein's theory of general relativity that said space-time is curved and dynamic. Then, as telescope technology vastly improved, Edwin Hubble was able to prove that the universe is expanding rather than static. The universe was also shown to be much bigger than we realized, with our solar system being just one tiny speck in the grand cosmos. Then came the theories of the Big Bang, inflation, and how the heavier elements are made in the inner cores of stars and supernovae. Now, in the 21st century, a new revolution in cosmology is taking place. As we reignite our quest for the stars through space exploration and quantum technologies, we now have our sights set upon the multiverse. Scientists are trying to find ways to peer into parallel universes, access higher dimensions, and use wormholes to travel through space-time. But before we can understand the multiverse, let's first make sure we understand this universe that we live in. How did our universe come to be? Most of us have heard of today's scientific model of the Big Bang. It says the universe started with a great explosion about 14 billion years ago. How does this model compare to ancient metaphysical cosmologies? One of the first metaphysical accounts of creation that really got my attention as a scientist was from the tradition of Kabbalah. The Kabbalistic creation stories remarkably coincide with present-day Big Bang models. The first Kabbalah book I ever read was a retranslation of Genesis chapter 1 based on Kabbalistic understanding. And at that same time, I had also been attending astrophysics lectures at the University of Washington on modern cosmology. I remember thinking, wow, they're saying the same things, only Kabbalah goes further into areas that science can't yet reach. I wondered what insights we might gain from Kabbalah. How might Kabbalah help guide our investigations and development of new physics theories? What was most astonishing was that the Kabbalists have had these insights for well over 1,000 years. And while science has only just come around to this point in the last 50 years or so, how do they relate? To explore the correlation, we can overlay the Big Bang timeline onto the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. Science tells us that the Big Bang started with a quantum fluctuation out of the vacuum. As that fluctuation emerged out of the quantum sea, it became a center point, a singularity that was infinitely dense and tiny. They call this the Planck era, and at this point, time did not exist. The top of the Tree of Life, known as the Crown, is this first instant of the universe's birth. It's the spark, the singularity. And at this point, everything is a unified, coherent whole. All forces, particles, and light are one. What might this initial state have been like? Well, it's beyond any known physics, but mystics and scientists alike describe it as total unity, where all is absolute perfection. Kabbalistically, we'd call this the perfect I Am, or the center point of creation. The second point on the tree, called wisdom, coincides with the initial spark beginning to expand. From the singularity, all the quantum potentials explode out in what we call the Big Bang. What was actually expanding was space-time itself. Now, it's interesting that the name Big Bang was given for this expression. Why is that? Well, there is no literal bang or physical sound made, but there was an explosion of force that caused a shattering. What's meant by a shattering? This idea comes up several times in both scientific and Kabbalistic cosmologies. In Kabbalah, the primordial vessel or singularity had such intense energy from source flowing into it that it could no longer contain all the energy. Under this intensity, the vessel shattered. Sparks and shards explode out everywhere. A primordial chaos ensues. To stop the catastrophe from going too far, a new form of order needs to come in to reorganize the potentials. Source then initiates the reformation of the Tree of Life to its current arrangement. How does this apply in science? Well, scientists call the shattering a phase change or a symmetry breaking. What does that mean? The simplest analogy is to think of water. In the liquid state, water is uniform and smooth. But as it cools to freezing temperatures, tiny ice crystals begin to form. This is a phase change that begins to break the uniformity. When the water completely freezes, we can see cracks, bubbles, and crystals. The water symmetry is then broken. The molecules rearrange themselves into a new formation. As they come into this new order, excess energy releases and the system stabilizes. What shatters at this step? Unity itself is what shatters. This first cause leads to the expansion of space-time. And according to Einstein's general relativity, space-time variations are equivalent to gravitational forces. The unity force is broken by this expansion, and gravity splits off to become its own entity, while the other forces remain unified and symmetric. This means all light and matter are still unified and formless. They call this the Grand Unification Era, but it lasts only a teeny tiny fraction of a second. As space-time expands, the quantum potentials then flow in to become an incredibly hot, dense plasma of radiation. What happens next? The third point on the Tree of Life, called understanding, relates to the formation of archetypal blueprints. These are the patterns and laws that will govern all the rest of creation. In Kabbalah, this point on the Tree of Life has a very feminine characteristic, while the previous one had more masculine aspects. Here, we can imagine a bunch of fertilized seeds being planted within the womb of space-time. But at this point, the womb was only the size of a single atom. Physically, as the universe continues to expand and cool, it causes a second phase change or symmetry breaking. This time, the unified force splits into two, separating the strong and the electroweak forces that govern nuclear interactions. The strong force is responsible for building quarks together to form particles like protons and neutrons, as well as to bind those particles together to form nuclei. The electroweak force is the unification of electromagnetic and weak forces that govern the interactions of charged particles and nuclear decay. Scientists call this the electroweak era. This second phase change also causes density fluctuations or tiny domains to form. What does that mean? It means that rather than being perfectly smooth, right from the beginning, there are variations. Now, why is this important? Those tiny fluctuations became like cosmic seeds. Again, we can imagine the feminine womb being impregnated by the masculine seed. And we might also think of them as alchemical vessels in a cosmic laboratory. Inside these vessels, the future stars, solar systems, galaxies, and other cosmic structures would be synthesized, including the elements that we are made of. What's more, the expansion and distribution of these fluctuations took on a fractal behavior. What do we mean by fractal here? It means that it is a pattern that is repeated at almost every scale. And this establishes the first archetypal forms. With this third point on the Tree of Life, we form the first sacred geometry of the triangle and establish the roots of the three pillars of masculine force, feminine form, and unity or balance. The dynamic dance of energy between these three pillars is the generative system of all creation. This is the formula. The rest of the tree simply duplicates this pattern. These first three steps all happen in less than a teeny tiny fraction of a second after the Big Bang. Even though we may describe them as separate steps, they are really all one. Now, what usually happens after the pregnant womb expands to a certain point? It's time to give birth. In this case, the birthing is what science calls the inflationary era. The infant universe suddenly and very rapidly inflates from about 1 nanometer in diameter, which is half the width of a DNA helix, up to 100 trillion kilometers across. Space-time expanded faster than the speed of light for a tiny fraction of a second. What did that cause? Well, first, a huge amount of energy was released. A true vacuum was established, and a third, final symmetry breaking occurs. This time, it was a big shattering. Scientifically, the so-called Higgs field froze, and the electromagnetic and weak forces also separate out. Prior to this point, the hot plasma of particles, light, and radiation was still rather homogeneous and undifferentiated. After this third shattering, particles gain mass, charge, spin, and other characteristics that define them uniquely. The Higgs field is what scientists currently believe is the cause of mass in particles, while the electromagnetic fields govern interactions between charged particles, and the weak force is the mediator of nuclear decay, like what happens in radioactive materials. Kabbalistically, we can equate this final shattering to the creation of the abyss on the Tree of Life. The abyss is this great divide between the universe we know and the supernal realm of unification. It's like a rip in the fabric of space that distorts everything that happens below or after the abyss. We can also think of what happens to white light when it shines through a prism. That light then separates out into a spectrum of diverse colors. The universe appears very different above and below this final shattering. Above is the realm of supersymmetry and unity. Below is the world we know. After this final shattering, the whole process slows down dramatically. This next part of the story correlates with the sphere of mercy or love on the Tree of Life. This sphere has to do with limitless light and establishing the laws of order in the physical universe. Standard model quantum physics, the four physical forces, and the laws of nature that we are more familiar with kick in here. Subatomic particles and antiparticles begin to form and then annihilate within the plasma, producing high-energy photons that dominate this era. This could be considered a let there be light moment. By 1 second after the Big Bang, only a small percentage of particles survive to become the eventual building blocks of matter. The fact that any particles survived at all is because there must have been more particles than antiparticles. But why that would be so is a big mystery scientists still don't understand. It's a very fortunate mystery, for us at least, because if it hadn't been this way, then nothing would have survived in the early universe except photons of light. Kabbalistically, though, we might wonder if some of those antiparticles could have fallen into the abyss in the previous step, while the regular particles were transmitted across the abyss to be formed into the universe we see today. If that's the case, then there must have been some plan guiding the creative process. Next comes the sphere of severity or power. This one is about placing limits upon the limitless light. It begins to form and restrict things according to the laws. This begins with what scientists call nucleosynthesis, and what I call cosmic alchemy. The strong force binds protons and neutrons together through fusion, producing mostly hydrogen, helium, and a little lithium atoms. These first atoms form into clouds of hot ionized plasma that begin to accumulate in those alchemical vessels of higher mass density. This forms the beginnings of nebulae and galactic superstructures. This also marks the shift from photons to matter being the main driver of the macrocosm. All the stages described so far happened within about the first 10 seconds after the Big Bang. After this first 10 seconds, the photon era dominates and the universe remains this hot and opaque plasma for hundreds of thousands of years. It's not until 377,000 years after the Big Bang that another significant shift occurs. Here, the temperature finally dropped enough for electrons to bind with atoms for the first time, becoming neutral in charge. This then cleared the way for photons to freely flow through space, unimpeded for the first time. At this point, the universe becomes transparent to light. Initially, this radiation would have been visible to the eye as a pale yellow-orange color. But with expansion and cooling, the frequency has dropped to the radio wave range by today. These photons, however, still carry information about the early universe. This forms what is called the cosmic microwave background radiation. And scientists have been imaging this afterglow from the Big Bang with increasing precision, giving us a glimpse into the fundamental structure of the universe. All in all, the density fluctuation maps validate the predictions made by Big Bang inflation models. How does this event line up with the Tree of Life? Well, this point corresponds very nicely with the center of the Tree of Life known as beauty, which happens to be yellow in color. It's about balance, and it shows us the image of the original spark that initiated the whole creation process. The next significant step brings us to victory on the Tree of Life, at the bottom of the Pillar of Force. Hundreds of millions of years after the Big Bang, gravity forms the earliest galaxies and stars. The stars, again, are the alchemical furnaces that fuse the heavier elements up to iron, including the elements necessary for life. After a few million years, the first generation stars explode as supernova, forming even heavier elements beyond iron, and seeding the universe for later generations of stars, galaxies, and clusters of galaxies. This epoch lasts about 1 billion years after the Big Bang. About 8 billion years later, newer stars attract cosmic dust and space rocks into their field. These ultimately form into the planets and solar systems we see today. Our Earth, which is about 4.5 billion years old, formed during this time. And we can correlate this formation of planets and solar systems to the sphere known as glory on the Tree of Life, which sits at the bottom of the pillar of form. As we again come to the middle pillar of the tree, to a sphere known as foundation, the universe's macrocosmic behavior shifts a third time. Originally, photons dominated, then matter took over and gravity slowed down expansion. But as expansion continued, this effect diminished. At about 9.8 billion years after the Big Bang, the expansion of the universe began to speed up again. This baffled scientists. What's causing the acceleration? It's some kind of mysterious anti-gravity field that scientists have labeled dark energy. On the Tree of Life, this point where that dark energy starts to speed up the expansion of the universe again corresponds to the foundation of the universe. And in Kabbalah, foundation relates to the will. The final step in our cosmological journey is the birth of life. This brings us to the bottom of the middle pillar on the tree, into a sphere known as the Kingdom of Earth. All the energies and elements from the universe funnel down into this last sphere, manifesting the fruit that was originally contained within the seed. Just as the universe began in a hot plasma, life is thought to have begun in a hot primordial soup, beginning with macromolecules, then RNA and DNA, and over the last 3 billion years or so, evolving and transforming towards more advanced life forms. And here we are today, 13.8 billion years after the Big Bang. In our new story of creation, there is one big question that scientists still struggle with. What started it all? What happened before the beginning? Religion says God started it. Metaphysics and mystical teachings reach deeper than that. In Kabbalah, the source of oneness that initiated the spark and emanated the Tree of Life is called Ein Sof. This name means infinite, perfect, and without end. It is everywhere and nowhere, kind of like the Tao. When Kabbalists refer to Ein Sof as God, we are saying everything is divine, because Ein Sof is in everything. There is nowhere that it cannot be. In alchemy and hermetics, there's a similar concept. The one mind acts upon prima materia, which can be equated to the quantum vacuum. Similarly, in the Upanishads, the Brahman acts upon Akasha. Even in quantum physics, we've established that observation is central to manifesting things out of the quantum vacuum. So some original observer, an infinite, eternal being, must have existed before the beginning of our physical universe. We can call it whatever we want, so long as we acknowledge it, because that is source. And remember, that source is in us. Kabbalah says the essence of Ein Sof flows through the whole tree. Even though we might perceive a diverse spectrum of colors, the light is all from one source and of one essence. This whole cosmology of Kabbalah, of course, traces the cause of creation back to a divine source, the Ein Sof. Some scientists today would like to invoke the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics to eliminate the need for an original observer or source. They say that in a multiverse, all possible universes are being created constantly, and there is no need for a divine source. But metaphysics also works with the idea of multiverses and parallel worlds, while still including universal consciousness or eternal spirit into the infinite multiverse. After all, Ein Sof is eternal and infinite. Its home is the multiverse. But again, before we can hope to understand the multiverse, we must first understand this universe we live in. And as much as the scientists have tried to do this, they still don't understand what makes up the majority of our universe. All the matter and light that we've discussed and described so far makes up less than 5% of our universe. How can anyone possibly claim that spirit or some divine source doesn't exist when they don't even know what most our universe is made of. Through a combination of astrophysics observations in the last couple decades, scientists have had to face the fact that less than 5% of the universe is made of ordinary matter. They have spent their entire careers on trying to understand this matter, only to discover that the majority of the universe is made of something else entirely. According to the latest data from the Planck satellite, which precisely measured the cosmic microwave background radiation left over from the Big Bang, less than 5% is ordinary matter, like the kinds addressed in the Standard Model of Physics, while 27% is what they call dark matter, and the other 68% is called dark energy. What are these dark things that make up 95% of our universe? First, let's establish, why are they called dark? They're called dark because they don't produce any photons. Thus, we can't directly observe them through our current methods. We can only infer their presence based on other observations, especially in relation to gravity and the expansion rate of our universe. Let's start with dark matter. How do we know it exists? The primary evidence comes from observations of galaxies. A couple of maverick astronomers were measuring rotational speeds of galaxies, including our own Milky Way. They noticed that the galaxies were moving so fast that they should fly apart. The only way to account for this is that they must have more mass or something holding them together. Calculations showed, for example, that the Milky Way should be 10 times more massive to rotate the way it does. This means 90% of the Milky Way's mass was due to dark matter. These observations have been confirmed by other types of measurements as well, and scientists are quite confident by now that dark matter exists. The question is, what is it? Some of it could be ordinary matter that is just very dim, such as burned out stars and black holes, but the leading proposals say that it must be some kind of elusive new form of elementary particles yet to be discovered. They must be massive to have such strong gravitational effects, yet they must also be weakly interacting with all other forms of matter in all other ways. String theorists have proposed that it is a type of supersymmetric particle called a neutralino. It's predicted to have mass, no charge, and is weakly interacting. And their calculations show that it could account for the whole 27% of dark matter, but the jury is still out. Whatever it is crucial to helping the stars and galaxies form and stay together. Experts believe it is ubiquitous in the universe and that it has a strong influence on cosmic structure and evolution. The other thing that had a critical role in helping form the cosmic structure and determine where the stars and galaxies have their birth was those density fluctuations from the early universe. These functioned like alchemical vessels in a cosmic laboratory, or like those little wombs in the fabric of space-time. Could dark matter be related to these? If so, that would mean it has a more feminine quality of contraction or formation, according to Kabbalistic principles. What about dark energy? What is this mysterious thing that makes up almost 70% of our universe? Since the 1990s, astronomers have discovered and confirmed that the expansion of the universe is speeding up. Measurements have estimated that when the universe was half its present age, there was a shift in the expansion rate. It went from slowing down due to gravity to gradually speeding up. There must be some form of energy causing this acceleration. Scientists have labeled this dark energy because they can't measure it directly. So dark energy is an energy of expansion. It's like the pressure that causes a balloon to inflate. We can think of matter and its gravitational pull as being contractive, or it puts on the brakes to expansion, while dark energy is like the gas pedal. Where is dark energy located in the universe? It's everywhere. It is thought to uniformly permeate all of space. Unlike dark matter, it doesn't accumulate anywhere in particular. Thus, its density is very low, much less than the density of matter found within galaxies. But because it uniformly fills empty space, this subtle energy can have a profound collective effect on the universe as a whole. What do scientists think it is? The most likely candidate is that it is the energy of the quantum vacuum in empty space, the zero-point energy. The main debate is whether it is a scalar field or a cosmological constant. The cosmological constant was first introduced by Einstein in 1917. Since E equals mc squared, general relativity predicts that a non-zero vacuum energy should have a gravitational effect. However, Einstein abandoned this idea of the cosmological constant, calling it his biggest blunder. Guess what, Einstein? You shouldn't have been so quick to dismiss it. The main difference between the cosmological constant and a scalar field hypothesis is whether the energy density is homogeneous and constant, or whether it varies in space and time. One dynamic scalar field proposed has been called quintessence. The latest results of the Planck satellite say there's no evidence of a dynamically varying dark energy. However, what if this dark energy is from the same source that caused the inflationary period of the Big Bang 14 billion years ago? We learned that in the first fraction of a second after the Big Bang, space-time exponentially expanded to enormous size. That required a very high energy density at the time. The energy driving inflation didn't just disappear all of a sudden. What happened to it? Could it be that as space-time expanded so rapidly that it also diluted this energy density somehow? It's possible that the dark energy we measure today is the same energy of expansion that caused inflation. It might only appear to be constant to us now in a similar way that space-time appears to be flat to us, meaning it shows no overall curvature, even though it started out as a tiny spherical bubble. Scientists are not sure if there's any relation between dark energy and inflation, but their expansive natures sure are reminiscent of one another. Could this quintessence, the energy of the vacuum, be harnessed? Nikola Tesla sure thought so, and wrote extensively on this topic. He was devoted to finding ways to tap into this energy source. Tesla said that if we could harness the energies of the vacuum, we would have powers almost unlimited and supernatural. Metaphysically, what might we relate this energy to? Recall, the quantum vacuum relates to the space between things. It's the gap, that blank canvas or empty space upon which all objects are painted or observed. It's the background to everything. The gap is a portal through which source energy enters into our universe. It's what triggered the Big Bang and its inflation. It's what's causing our current expansion rate to speed up, and it's everywhere, including inside the atoms of our bodies. Could this energy of expansion be the will of Ensof pushing against the unmanifest? Could that Ensofic source be what is driving progression and expansion onwards? I believe so. In this episode, we've worked our way from the oneness to diversity through the Big Bang and cosmology models. That diversity came from various shatterings or symmetry breaking through the process of creation. Do these physical shatterings mean that we are separate from source and each other? While we may experience separation at a physical level, we are not just physical, we are spirit. Separation is mostly a perception. This world of diverse forms is about the world of sensory perception. Even though we might perceive a spectrum of colors, the light is all from one source and is of one essence. Remember, the essence of Ensof flows through the whole tree, that includes matter and mind. So no, we are not really separate, because spirit is infinite, eternal oneness. It is in all things and it connects all things. I'm Dr. Teresa Bullard. Thank you for exploring the mysteries of the universe with me in this episode of Mystery Teachings.